Hi, I'm Malachi, and you're listening to the Judge a Book podcast. Downloads and reviews help us out a ton, so leave us 5 stars before you go. Every single week, join in for our book club where we talk about the books that we love, or maybe not so loved. New books will be chosen every month, and you'll get to listen to exactly how we judge a book. All right, welcome back to the Judge a Book podcast. This week we are talking about part 2 of A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. If you haven't already read that, stop listening right now, go read, because spoilers are ahead. This week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast is brought to you in part by Ibotta. Ibotta is a cashback rewards app that I use with my groceries, online purchases, and so much more to gain real cash back or exchange for gift cards, which, you know, of course, I use to buy more books. Get started by using the referral code in the podcast description below and start earning your cash back now. I am back this week with Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Malachi. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, we're doing okay. Pushing through the week, as we always do.
Yes, busy lives, huh? Well, we
are... Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I am excited to talk about this week's reading. Like I said last week, I pretty much immediately after we got done recording started reading again because I was so ready to find out. I know Sarah already knew, so it wasn't as page-turning for her, but I was so excited to find out what happened. And yet again, I still feel like I have no answers. So I'm probably more confused now than I was last week. As to who I think it is. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of go over everything that we read last week. So we ended up last week, the kind of last scene that we saw was Pip camping with her friends, and she had the little mysterious note in her sleeping bag. And we start off the next day, and she's immediately kind of thinking about the note, and she is at school. She asks Kara to borrow her computer and flags the computer so that she can see if Naomi prints anything, because at this point, Pip is pretty suspicious of Naomi and thinks Naomi might be the one who printed the note, considering her sister probably would know that Kara and Pip were out camping, where they were. So she flags the computer so that she can see anything that gets printed from their computer. After that, Pip interviews Emma again, and now she's questioning her about the older guy because she didn't know about it last time she talked to Emma. So she talks to Emma about the older guy. Emma's like, did Chloe tell you that? And Emma brings up Mr. Ward, who is Kara and Naomi's dad, who is also a teacher at the school. And mentions that Andy was not the happiest with Mr. Ward kind of around the time that she went missing. And that is a red flag to Pip because Pip has already talked to Mr. Ward, and Mr. Ward said that no, he really didn't have any kind of relationship with Andy. He only had her in class one time and there was really nothing other than that. And so for Mr. Ward to get brought up again, Pip is really suspicious. She talks to Mr. Ward after class one day and he kind of fesses that there was a bullying issue with Andy where she was like blackmailing a girl and sent out some inappropriate videos and images to the whole school of this girl. And Mr. Ward had found out about that and was going to, and had brought it up to her parents and said, you know, if this doesn't get fixed, like she's gonna get suspended from school. And then Andy went missing. So it just didn't seem appropriate to Mr. Ward to bring it up after the fact because obviously there was nothing that can be done if Andy's missing. So I think Pip at that point kind of thinks, okay, there's probably not more to Mr. Ward. He just had that on his chest and didn't really want to bring it up about her. Then Pip talks again to Naomi, and Naomi brings up Natalie Da Silva, who is the girl that Andy was bullying, and the videos got sent all around the school and everything like that. But now she has a name to who it was that was getting bullied. And she gets the phone number of Natalie and tries to go to her house, or tries to call, but she doesn't answer. As Pip is talking to Naomi, she finds out that Andy actually ended up threatening Nat with blackmail about her brother Daniel, and says that Daniel slept with Andy and that she would tell everybody, which would get him in a lot of trouble because he was married, he was on the police force, and he was overage. I think Andy would have been 15 at that time, and Daniel would have been 20, if I'm correct. Because Natalie didn't answer the phone, decides to go to Nat's house, and she finds out that Nat is really unhappy with Andy. She was almost, it almost seemed like she was not remorseful that Andy had died, that she almost deserved it after everything that she'd done to Natalie. And we find out that she is the one that put the threatening note in Andy's locker that we found out from Stanley, the journalist, up at the beginning of, in part one. We also find out at that point that Daniel is a police officer. We find that out from Natalie, and that he was on the case. He would have been a police officer at the time that Andy went missing. And so it kind of just ties everybody together and puts a lot of suspicion in Pip's mind. So Daniel gets put on the suspects list. Nat gets put on the suspect list because she threatened Andy. So we've got a couple new people on that suspect list. After this, Andy had put in an FOI request to get some information about the trial and the interviews, and two of them got denied, but Sal's interview got granted. And there was a lot of stuff blurred out, so it was kind of hard to understand, you know, kind of everything that was going on. Like, there was a lot of missing pieces because a lot of it got blurred out, I think, for privacy reasons. But we can see in that Sal is being really evasive and not wanting to answer a lot of questions that the police have. And we get some answers to that in this part, but it doesn't look good for Sal. After reading this interview, Pip then goes to Becca's house, which is Andy's sister, so the Bell's house. And Becca doesn't want to talk. She says that, you know, her and her mom are finally doing better, and she really doesn't want to talk to anybody about what's going on. So we don't get a lot of information. But one little key point that I feel like was dropped in is that seeing, quote unquote, Stanley Forbes, the journalist, which was kind of shocking to me. And I don't know if it's really a big deal, but it seems like kind of an interesting point that she is actually dating this journalist who we don't think is a very good guy. While Pip is over at Becca's house, she sees Jess Walker, who was a friend of Becca's during the time all of this. They're not really close friends now, but used to be a really close friend of Becca's. She interviews her, and Jess kind of gives us a little more insight into the household life of the Bells and what it was like, and that it was very dysfunctional. Jason tore down the girls, he tore down his wife, and he just wasn't the best person. We also find out that at one point, Becca wants to go to one of the calamity parties that Andy is always going to. So they go, and then Becca disappears during the party. She goes away from Jess and isn't around her, and then Jess ends up having to walk home alone, tipsy from the night, and so she's really not happy with Becca, and that kind of puts a wedge in their friendship going forward. But some facts that we kind of found out about that was the next morning, Becca needed to go get a morning after pill, but she really didn't tell Jess what was going on. It seems like Jess just kind of assumed that, you know, something happened and that's why, but she just wasn't really happy with Becca, and there weren't a lot of answers about what really happened during that night. And then another little tidbit that we found out was that Max and Andy were super close at the party and were chatting to each other, and that is contradicting what Max says. And he says that he was never really close with Andy and didn't have a good relationship and they didn't really talk. We also find out that Max, he's Nancy on Facebook so that he can post all of his parties and all of that. That's his kind of like throwaway Facebook account that businesses can't see.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pip goes to question Max about that because she's found out that they were closer than he made it out to be. Also, he has a secret Facebook account. And while Pip is there, she finds a picture of Andy naked in a bathroom. And Max has it, which is so odd to me, especially because Andy's dead now, or presumed dead. She's missing. And he just has a picture of a girl who they think is dead, naked, in his room. I don't know. That bothered me.
That's pretty sus. That's very sus.
Yeah, it really bothered me. And so Max kind of gives out some more information after Pip finds this, and he says that he has been buying drugs from Andy. Andy was dealing drugs. So to get more information about this, Pip decides now she wants to go to a calamity party.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That scene killed me. Pip tells all of her friends she wants to go. They all get all dressed up. She heads out in the backyard and kind of is hanging out with the people who, I guess, were smoking marijuana, smoking weed in the backyard to try and get some information. This guy is really pushy with her, but she tells him that she's going to give him her phone number, and instead she goes in and gets the contact of the drug dealer that Andy was getting drugs from at the time. His name's Howie. She got his phone number and the location where people meet him to go buy drugs. So what does Pip do? She stalks out Howie. She sits in this gas station parking lot, watches him, takes some pictures of him dealing drugs, and then follows him to his house. Like, are you kidding? And what street is the house on? Monroe Street, which is where Andy's car was. We kind of cut chapters. She's in shock. She calls Ravi, tells Ravi he needs to hurry over there, and we find out that Howie's car has the same license plate that Sal had written down the day that Andy went missing, or very recently. And so there we have it. Like, we know where that license plate came from, and it really just ties everybody together. It definitely confirms that this is who Andy knew. And Pip is just kind of, I don't know, she's so wild at this point in the book. She goes into this drug dealer's house, confronts him, and blackmails him. I'm just mind blown at some of her decisions.
Same.
Yeah, they just straight up ambush him, and they find out that Andy was selling quite a few drugs, but like one of the key ones that we focus on is that she was selling roofies, which, you know, gets Pip thinking that they're tied to the parties and all of this. And we also find out that Andy had a second phone, a burner phone. Then we kind of go to a dinner scene, and Pip is at dinner with her family, and we get another one of these messages from the anonymous person. And she gets a text, and it pretty much says, like, leave it alone while you still can. Obviously, that rattles Pip. I think that she's up, like, a lot of the night, you know? I would definitely be worried, too. And then for the first time in Pip's life, she decides to skip school. And not only is she going to skip school, she's skipping school to break into somebody's house. Oh my gosh. She breaks into the Bell's house, which is Andy's house, Becca's house, and her mom. And she makes Ravi come with her. And while they're in the house, Becca comes back home. I was freaking out during this whole scene.
This is like, it was a scene straight out of like a thriller, basically. Yes,
it was. They're like hiding up there. They're literally in Andy's room. Like, oh, it was just a mess. They're like looking under like loose floorboards trying to find this burner phone, and they can't find it, but they do find one of Andy's old journals. And we get some information off of this. There are some codes written in there, which Howie had told her to write in code. There's a phone number that is scratched out where you really can't see a lot of it. And then there's a lot of other things that are scratched out that we just have no idea what they are at this point. One very important clue that we find out is Ivy, which is Ivy House, and we figure that it's Ivy House because it has the same floor and the same mirror and bathtub as the picture of Andy that Max had at his house. What?
Sure.
The next logical step in Pip's mind is to go speak with the owner of the Ivy House Hotel or Bread and Breakfast, whatever it is. And the owner says that she recognizes Andy from a few weeks ago.
Mind blown.
Yes. And we find out that the son says that the owner, this lady, has Alzheimer's, but I'm not completely convinced, but we can talk about that in a minute. But right. It's just hard for me to believe that she's got mixed up 5 years ago and a few weeks ago. So I'm very sus about this situation. As they're leaving Ivy House, they see Max and Howie talking. So now we've tied Max to Andy, and we've tied Max to Howie, who Max says he's never dealt with Howie before, but now they're sitting here talking. And this just spirals that Rufy's conversation that she kind of had going in her mind before. And she decides to message several students around that age of Andy and Max and see if they had any suspicion about Rufy's, if they know about the parties being drugged. And some say yes, some say no. But one very important one that kind of gets brought up is that a girl named Jo says that yes, there was an incident where they believe they got drugged. Someone that she knows, who she's not going to reveal who it is, filed a report with the police station with a young officer, and the only young officer on the police at that time is Daniel Silva. So, big ol' mess right here. Daniel's getting tied back to everything. We've got the roofies tied in. Everyone's really getting tied to everybody right now. Pip then calls Kara. I think this might be the next day. Pip calls Kara and asks for help getting into Naomi's Facebook account because she wants to look at Max's pictures, which she can't see any of them off of that are on the Nancy page just because she's not friends with him. And so she can only see the ones that Naomi are tagged in. So now they're going to hack into Naomi's Facebook account and they get in and she sees a picture. Here we go. We're getting real tangled up here. This is the big old crazy scene to me. She sees a picture and everybody's in it that's supposed to be at the party, right? So who does that leave to take the picture? Sal. And it's not that. And at first you're kind of thinking, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It could have been before Sal left the party. Except you can see Naomi's phone and it says 12:09 p.m., which is supposed to be after Sal left, according to the whole group of friends. But according to Sal, that lines up because he said he didn't leave until around 12:15, I believe. So That lines up. And then in the window, you can see the blue shirt that Sal was wearing. So they kind of got caught. And so once they find out that Sal had to have left after 12:09 p.m., Ravi and Pip run through a test run to see if Sal would have had time to kill Andy and bury her and get away and get back home by the time his dad said he got home, which was 12:45. And lo and behold, there's not enough time, but plus they're not actually doing it. So you have to account for even more time because who knows how long it would actually take to kill somebody, bury them, and bury them so well that they still haven't been found to this day. So it's pretty much ruled out. Like, obviously Sal couldn't have done it according to this timeline right now. So Pip decides to confront Naomi, and when she goes to confront Naomi, Max is also there, so it's a 2-for-1. She's about to confront them, and a big freaking mic drop. Max and Naomi end up admitting that one night they went to a party, they all got drunk, Max said he could drive home, but he obviously wasn't completely in his right mind and they shouldn't have done it, and they ended up hitting a man on the shoulder of the road, like breaking his legs, he was bloody and ended up in a coma for weeks. And then they got blackmail texted to delete all photos from Sal because somebody knew they did it, and they did. They deleted all photos from Sal from that night. They changed their story to the police and said he left at 10:30, and it just changed everything. So that's kind of where we end off this week's reading. So much happened.
Oh yeah, a lot happens very quickly too.
Yes, literally page after page after page, new information kept getting dropped. So What did you think about this week's reading?
Oh my God. Like, I was reading back through this and I was just like, wow, the foreshadowing, There was stuff in here that like literally I was in here. There was one part that I was like, oh my God, this was foreshadowed so early and I completely missed it.
That is so funny that when you said that last week, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they hinted it so early. It just makes my mind like roll. Like, I'm just like thinking and thinking and thinking about what it could be.
It was a very subtle detail, and it was one thing that I brushed off completely.
So I'm like trying to remember back, like, maybe I can figure it out, which I feel like I'm not going to figure it out, but you know.
I mean, that's the good part about a mystery. Like, you don't know who it's going to be, and maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong.
Yeah, that's so true. I loved this section. It was very interesting. So much happened.
There
were so many like new characters that got brought in, the huge bomb that got dropped about them hitting somebody on the side of the road. I don't know. There were just so many little details that got added in this week.
Mm-hmm.
Has your opinion changed on any of the characters so far?
Well,
from part one to part two.
I suddenly remember why I hated Max Hastings so much.
Yes, Max and Naomi are definitely two characters my opinion has changed of a lot. I feel like Naomi, I was so suspicious of her in the start, but now I feel like she just had a guilty conscience in a lot of it, so it kind of changes my opinion on that. Maybe she's not as suspicious, but obviously there was something bigger kind of behind the scenes that was going on. And oh, Max, yeah. Oh my gosh, Max.
I hate Max so much. Yes. First the picture, and then yes. When he was basically telling Naomi, don't spill this. If you do, I will like throttle you. And she's like, and you can tell from that scene alone that she is most likely innocent because she's sobbing her eyes out, and mm-hmm. she's the one who spills it, not Max.
Yes, and there are just so many things. Max has lied so many times, and it's really just complicated the whole situation, and it's just, I definitely don't like Max.
No, I don't. I ironically enough, like, I think I remember after reading this scene, I wasn't suspicious of them anymore.
Yeah. I think I'm definitely less suspicious. I'm definitely not suspicious of Naomi. Max, yeah. I am not, I'm still not 100% sure that he's not involved in some way just because of how much he's lied and, like, how he seems to know everybody that's involved and, like, I don't know. I feel like, though, maybe what I feel like I'm going to find out about Max is more so involved with roofying and, like, there might be mm-hmm. some more confirmation in that and not really confirmation in the rest of it, but I guess I will find out.
However, I think after reading this part, I definitely fell in love with Pippa a lot more because I think my two favorite scenes were the one where she proposes to her friends to go to the calamity party.
Yes.
And everyone immediately just stops and looks at her and says, who are you and what have you done with Pippa?
Yes.
Like, immediately. And then the other scene when she goes out to the backyard at the calamity party and is like, so you got the grass, the good mm-hmm. goods. And I was like, oh my God. And he was so like, yeah, you're definitely drunk. And she's like, yes, that's what I'm doing right now. That's something I would have pulled at a party.
Yeah, it's too funny. And just the way that she goes about it, she's like going to give her number, except she's not. She's just getting all his information. And it was just good
stuff.
Love
to see it.
Yeah. What three words would you use to describe this section or the whole book so far?
Okay, powerful,
mm-hmm.
Intense.
Yes.
And fast-paced. I know that's two words, but like if you put the hyphen in there, it counts.
I know. I sat there thinking about this, and there were several things that I was going to do that were hyphen. And I'm like, should I do it? Should I not do it? I think for me, which these are kind of not the most interesting ones, but suspenseful, obviously. Mm-hmm. Twisting. I feel like this book is so full of twists. Like anytime you think you know what's going on, it switches and you don't. And just there's so much mystery in it. It's just like you're just constantly needing to know what happened. Like, I don't know. It's just a big mystery and a mystery and a mystery. There's so many things inside of each other going on.
Exactly. It's kind of like, it's like those presents at Christmas where they put box in the box in the box in the box.
Yes. Are there any unexpected twists so far? But with this book, obviously there are unexpected twists.
There are many. I think the biggest one for me was definitely either Andy blackmailing Natalie Da Silva
mm-hmm.
or Andy selling the drugs.
Yeah, those are both big ones to me. Picture of Andy and Max's room and that being tied to Ivy House. That is a big twist to me. The lady that says that she saw her a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, that one. I was like, so she's not dead is what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. There's so many unexpected twists. You can't even nail it down to one. Like, there's just so much going on. Okay, least favorite character so far.
Max Hastings.
I can't stand Max. I can't stand Stanley still, though. And I don't know if I dislike Stanley more. I don't know. It's hard for me. Which mm-hmm. I know we really didn't get to see a lot of Stanley in this section, but his just core characteristics are just so poor to me that I really dislike him. But then a lot of these decisions that Max has made have made me like super dislikes Max too.
Fair.
And then we found out more about their dad, Andy's dad, and I definitely dislike him even more now than I did before. Him like really talking down the girls and talking down his wife. I just, he's not a good guy.
He never is. Like, oh God, he gets on my nerves. You don't treat your kids like that. You don't treat your wife like that. Just don't. Thank you.
Yeah, so they're just, there's a bunch of not so nice men in this book.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, when you were reading this part, who did you think it was as of part two?
Natalie Da Silva, or her brother,
Yeah. It was definitely suspicious to me because we've not come to any kind of closure about his involvement in anything. Like, he's just kind of left hanging there, and we don't know anything. Like, Naomi and Max, we found out kind of some behind-the-scenes stuff about them, but Daniel and Natalie are just kind of hanging out there, and we haven't come to any kind of conclusion with them.
Yeah, I think my main concern with having Natalie as, like, one of your prime suspects, especially on my end, was, like, you see her hate for her, brutally when we first meet Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like two in the face. And yes. she literally laughs and says, "You actually think I killed her?"
Yeah, like, and yeah, you think my brother did it? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's two in your face. And that's why I was like, I don't know if she would do that.
My number one suspect right now is no one, because I think Andy's alive.
There you go. Exactly. Big brain.
But then there's also still the fact that even if Andy's alive, there's still someone that is suspect because Sal's dead. So, yeah, I don't know who I think messed with Sal, but at this point, I think Andy's alive. So I feel like I don't have a number one suspect.
That's fair. And I don't know, like, if you go down that route, you kind of have to ask yourself, do you think Andy had enough guts to kill Sal? That's the real question.
Yeah, for sure. Like, just because Andy's alive doesn't mean that she killed Sal, but she could have. I don't know. It's just such a mess. But yeah, I don't have a number one suspect for Andy because as of part two, I think Andy's still alive.
That's fair. I respect that.
Any decisions that they've made that you disagree with?
Okay. When I read through this again, I just was so bewildered by the fact that she was like, yeah, I'm going to go up to this drug dealer.
Yes.
No. Why? Why would you?
Yes. Like, you're literally a teenager in high school going up to a grown man's house. Like, not even the fact that he's a drug dealer, but just a grown man's house, you're just going to walk right in? Like, that's shocking in itself. And then he's a drug dealer on top of that, so.
Oh, my. She literally just walked up to his door, held her phone out, and said, I'm going to take these photos to the cops if you don't let us in right now.
Yeah, like, she just straight up ambushed and blackmailed him and didn't even think of the consequences. Like, dude deals drugs. Like,
it was so insane. And then I think the other thing that I had issue with, especially the second time around, because I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, was when Pip went under the guise of a CNN reporter to try and get the information about the parties,
yes,
of the Calamities and the roofies. And I'm just like, oh, that
there was
that
definitely some moral dilemma there. That was, yeah.
And it even hurt me because the one girl was just like, let me know when it airs. Mm-hmm. Like, oh no.
I think my biggest issue is them breaking into the Bell's house. And
yeah.
If you are under the presumption that Andy's dead, they're, like, literally invading the space of a dead girl's, like, her last memories, her last space. Like, oh, that just hurt me. Like, it was crossing the line, and I understand, like, she felt like she needed those details, and she probably does, or probably did, and it led to a lot of other information, but it was so hard for me. And, like, I don't know, thinking from, like, the mom's perspective, you know, the mom's kept Andy's room, like, exactly how it was. And, like, for someone to intrude in that, you know?
Yeah.
That was hard for me. And I get it for the point of the story and, like, you know, moving along the plot, but that was hard for me.
Yeah, no, I get that entirely. Like, I haven't had to deal with a situation like that, but I know it's hard for the families that have had to deal with that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Like, just imagine the emotional turmoil you have to get to find out that your daughter who's been missing/dead for 5 years, and you have to, like, pack up her room. Like, that's so hard.
Yes. And then also in that same, like, in the exact same scene, having Ravi break in with her. And, you know, he, like, mentions if he gets caught breaking in after his brother's done this, and he's a male, and he's not white, and the town hates him, like, he could have a lot more serious repercussions than Pip has. And so there was just a lot in that scene that was hard for me.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, if anything, like, I feel like after Ravi brought that up, Pippo was just like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, like, you can stay out here. And then he was like, no, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
Which I found pretty interesting, but mm-hmm. I feel like he definitely should have stayed outside.
Yeah, that was hard, especially then when Becca comes in and it's like, ah!
What's going on?
We're gonna get caught. They're gonna get caught.
They definitely almost got caught.
Yes. Yeah, because the cat went into the room, right? And Becca went
that
up.
Cat.
Yeah, the Becca went up to the room. You know you're not supposed to be in this room. Oh, that was intense.
I'm just curious. Like I was thinking back over that scene. And I'm just like, was the door actually propped open this entire time? Or to make, because otherwise, how would the cat get in?
I think it had to have been. They probably just didn't close it behind them because they didn't expect anyone to be home.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. So, yeah, they must have just been hiding. But my guess is that they just didn't even close it because they didn't expect anybody to be there. So, craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next week, I know you already know what happens, but.
Oh, God.
Close or a cliffhanger? I'm stuck between the two because I hate that there's already a second book. So it makes me think that it's going to get on some kind of cliffhanger. But at the same time, I feel like we are going to come to a close. That's just my prediction. I think we're going to come to a close, but you kind of already know.
I mean, I already know, but I also feel like, especially in the case of murder mystery books, you kind of have to wrap up your plot into one book, because I think one of the worst examples I could probably think of, I know I brought this up last week and I'm going to bring it up again, Truly Devious. The first book does not solve the mystery. It's literally, from what I understand, it's dragged on throughout the series. And I'm just I was really expecting something to be solved and getting some headway, and it didn't happen. But I feel like that's the case in that means you have to make the mystery interesting enough in the first book to make people want to read the rest. But also, I feel like there's so many clues and stuff involved in a mystery that you have to conclude it in the first book so that way your reader does not forget in between without rereading. So I definitely feel
There's a year between books or, stuff like that.
Exactly.
If the whole series isn't out, then you could kind of be left uninterested after that long of time.
Yeah, I am just going to say one thing. I am ready to cry again when reading part three, because part three hurt me so. I think there are maybe two or three separate times. One of them I was actually straight up crying. The other two I was tearing up. There are things that you will not expect to happen. Jaws will be dropped. The floor. Gone. Everything. Oh, my God.
I can't believe that I get to finish it. After this, I'm I don't know. I'm excited to finish it, but now you've made me nervous.
Yeah, it gives you a reason to go get Good Girl Bad Blood in stores in March. It's the sequel. It's amazing. I'm very excited. I also asked for it as an arc. I don't know if I'm going to get it, but we'll see how that goes. I can't wait to relive. How many pages? Because we left off on page 255 and it ends on 387. I don't know how they're going to pack 100. I don't know how exactly she packed 100 pages worth of jaw-dropping twists in that, but.
Yeah, this is another smaller section. This is the first week was the smallest. This is the second small section, and we've got a lot to wrap up.
Yeah. This book, if you don't read it in parts, you could literally read it in a day.
I would have.
So fast-paced.
I 100% would have. That first night when I was reading it, I wanted to know so badly what was going to happen next that I would have read it all that night.
Oh, yeah. And as I mentioned last week, I read it, the night before, and then I finished it, devoured it the next day, and I was I think I came down in a book hangover after that, and I just didn't know how to process anything anymore.
This is a good book to get you out of a book hangover or a book slump, but it probably will put you back into one.
I mean, you're right, though. You're probably right.
I am still so stuck on the fact that that lady says that she saw Andy a few weeks ago, so I can't wait to, find out what happens with that. Well, if there's really nothing else to talk about this week, I guess we can kind of wrap it up and get to reading the next part. So, for episode 3, we're just going to be talking about part 3 and the whole book, and Sarah finally gets to spill all of her thoughts and foreshadowing and all of that she's had to keep a secret.
I should actually write those down.
Yes, you should. So we can talk about them, because I'm going to be curious as to what you saw if I don't put them together. So definitely write them down so we can talk about them. I can't wait.
Yes.
I'm so excited. That's it for today's episode of Judge a Book. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a 5-star review before you go. Connect with me on social media. They're all linked in the pod description. And don't forget, next Monday, a new episode of Book Club will be released, and we can once again judge a book.